Hello, you're about to listen to the movie mixtape with Dirk and Marcy. We have one final surprise for our Monsters mix. Our creative director, executive producer, and best friend of the show, Mikey P, is back, and he's picked Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990. So sit back, relax, and cowabunga!
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for joining us.
I'm afraid, though, you are 2 minutes late, so we will not be paying full price for this pizza.
How are you, Marcy Dale?
I'm okay. I'm never ready for the introductions to this show, so, but good. I'm good. How are you?
Flipping fantastic. So good right now, because we had a lovely chat before we came on about jumpers, sushi cats, and things of that ilk. So I'm feeling like we've mentally prepared ourselves, got ourselves in a zone to talk about this film that we're going to talk about. Yeah, you all right?
Yeah, so this is a fun little surprise. I don't think anybody knows happening. So, yes, I'm good. I'm very good, and I'm really excited. So,
all right, well, tell us, what's the surprise? You big surprise person?
I don't know. I think he should tell us.
I'm exercising the clause in my contract as executive producer that I get to come in and talk about whatever I want.
Who is that beautiful man speaking in my ear on my video screen? Oh, it's Mikey P. Hello, Mikey P. How are you doing?
Guys, Thank you again for the invite.
Welcome back. We're so happy you actually wanted to come back.
Of course. And I will reveal, I have nothing to do really with the show. I'm not really executive producer, maybe in spirit. And I just wanted to say, you guys are doing great. Really are.
Aww.
Every episode I listen to, you guys are getting better. And I wish I had more to do with the show. But you guys are doing amazing. And I'm proud of you.
Edit that bit out. Jesus Christ. We don't accept compliments in this show. All right?
Okay, gotcha.
Also, like, you are, like, a big part of it. Yeah, of course you are.
Mm-hmm. And hang on, what is this? Is this a resignation from your executive producer status? Because I've been mailing you checks every month that you have been cashing. £5.67.
We're marketing the show everywhere. I've been putting it to use.
He's got a side gig with Koblasto. They're just embezzling all this money to get there.
Well, Mikey, thank you for that, though. God bless you.
Thank you.
And you are flipping involved in the show. Here you are now on another episode. And every time we record, I don't know what you're banging on about. You're always in the behind that glass screen, and you're always making those funny faces at Marcy all the time. All the time. And I think it's appropriate and fair, because she does need reining in. She does let herself go a few times. And I'm grateful for you. So thank you, Mikey P, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. What have you guys been up to? What's been new? I know you have a lot going on, so I want to give us everybody
a lot. The house is going. We had some plumbing issues today, but we have a home warranty. So everybody, if you're buying a home for the first time, make sure you get that 1-year home warranty, because it is a lifesaver. And there you go.
So wait, so you've got, like, if anything breaks in your home within a year, Bill Clinton turns up and fixes it.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah,
that is
dressed
a good
up
idea.
Like the Tooth Fairy. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That is a good
it's
idea.
Pretty magic. Yeah, it's nice. We're kind of hoping the AC breaks any day now, so we can get a brand new one for no charge.
Just kick your TV in, and maybe Barack Obama
pretty
will turn
sure
up
that.
With a new 4K one.
Oh my gosh,
she's working on a bigger podcast studio now for herself.
Well, it can't get much smaller.
This is pretty small, yeah.
Well, do you know what? What's going on with your plumbing? Have you flushed your toilet too many times?
I guess so. I just got so excited, like, that's all I did for one day straight.
It's so tempting.
Too many goldfish down the toilet, I guess.
Oh, no. God, pray for them. Pray for them. It's so tempting when you get that new house, though, isn't it? Just turn all the taps on at the same time. Turn all the taps on at the same time and see which one's quickest. You just get your stopwatch out.
I never had a water bill before the house, and I just wanted to get the full experience with
that. That's how, now it feels like a home. Does it feel like home now?
Now it feels like a home. The water bill's over $300.
Now that you're paying for it, it feels like a home. Yeah, congratulations. Welcome to home ownership. It costs a lot of money.
That's a nightmare. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh no. It'll be fine. But well, Dirk, what's new and exciting with you? Mikey also asked.
Oh my God, what's Jesus.
Going on?
I can tell you what's new. I probably can't tell you what's exciting. I don't know. I went to my kids' school sports day today and forgot to put sun cream on, and so I've got sunburn all on the back of my neck. Is that exciting?
Sun cream.
Yep. Like cream soda. We just put cream soda on our necks.
All right. Wow. Sun cream. That's
oh my God. Sun cream. That's what you've been. That's what you've been dazzled by. The phrase sun cream. What do you call it? Sun what?
Sunblock.
Yeah, but what if it's like a factor 4 or something? That's not a block, is it? It's only a block if it's only a block if it's like factor 50 or something.
Sunblock or sunscreen, correct? That's what we call it.
Sunblock. You need a sounder for the segment where Dirk teaches us a British saying that we all dumb Americans didn't
know. Sun cream. Oh,
Jesus, you know the way that you were flabbergasted that I could have called something sun cream. You know, flipping Nora. You know, you talk to me all the time about the Declaration of Independence, and I act like I know what's going on. But you know, you can't handle sunscreen, sun cream. I don't even know what I'm saying now. And that little Bing reminded me to turn off my emails. Who's emailing me at this time? It's 11 o'clock at night. I tell you, who's emailing me? Flipping IKEA asking me if I want to buy one of their sofas. I don't IKEA. Just stop emailing me at 11 o'clock at night.
Okay. So we just lost the sponsorship.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Mikey, we know now when you come on, don't ask Dirk how he's doing, because we don't want to lose sponsors and hear about sun cream, whatever the hell that is.
Oh, how funny. But I just got a text that we have a leak in our bathroom right now. How funny is that?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
Who's texting you that, Logan?
Yeah. Look, my kids are saying, Dad, fix the toilet. Yeah, exactly.
It's contagious. I'm so sorry. Well, Mikey, what's new with you? Do you have anything like to promote, or is there anything you want to talk about?
The biggest thing that's going on in my life is thanks to Marcy Dale, speaking of Logan, is that she recommended that we watch Gravity Falls. And let me tell you, these kids, they went through two seasons. They watched it twice. I'm watching the show. I'm loving it. I'm on the couch crying with my daughter when it was over. It's an amazing show. And Dirk, I think we mentioned it to you. You have to get on it with Bessie. It's an amazing show.
Oh,
I had such a good time.
I'm so happy to hear this. I love that show so much. I think we were saying, like, I watch it at least once a year now. Yeah. But I'm so happy they loved it. I'm so happy you loved it. It's a really funny, weird, feel-good show. And I hope a lot of other people will give it a shot if they haven't. It's on Disney Plus, too. Yeah. Disney Plus.
I needed something comfort on myself, just by myself working at night, and I threw it on just to feel a good show.
Yeah, I know. I don't even have kids yet, and I watch it by myself all the time.
Well, it's added to my list. We're watching the Ms. Marvel show at the moment with Bets. Mm-hmm. That's our weekly sit down, because I mean she watches the TV all the time. She watches shows about Italian fairies with the power of the sun, you know, and various different things continuously on a loop. But that is at the moment, Ms. Marvel is the one thing that we sit down and we watch together. So and that's nearly done. I think you, Marcy,
she's watched into
the final
it.
Episode
she's a,
this
she's
week.
A tough
oh
person.
Yeah, she's into it. Okay, she's awesome. Into it. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's into it. I mean, I don't know whether that's because she gets to stir up a little bit later if we put an episode on or not. I mean, I'm not unhip to her shenanigans. I know that she will do anything for an extra 15 minutes past her bedtime, but I think she is into it because she does ask to watch it. She'll go, oh, it's Wednesday, Dad, is the new episode out? So she knows.
Aww.
She knows. Although it's Wednesday tonight when we're recording, spoilers, and I haven't watched it. Is it Wednesday?
It is Wednesday.
Thank God. Wednesday. But I'm going to, I've said to her about Gravity Falls, and so it's on the list. It's on the mental list.
Okay. I think she'll really like it. And there are really good, strong female leads in it.
She likes that on Disney. Is it Owl House? Have you seen that, Mikey?
No, I've seen the Amphibian show. I can't think. It's the same people that made Gravity Falls made another show called Amphibian.
Oh, okay. I've seen the trailer for it.
I can't remember the name of the show, but there's a character named Marcy in it, and it's spelled the same way. So that's the reason I got that all started. That's how I got started on Adventure Time, too, because there's how a Marcy funny. In that show. So it's really rare. You don't hear my name ever anywhere. So if I find out there's even, like, one minor character with my name on it, I will give it a shot.
I don't know about that, because you text me voice messages all the time. That's just your name. You just repeating your name all the time. I open it up and he just goes, Marcy! All the time. So I hear your name all the time. So
am I a Furby? Like, I didn't know.
That's
what I
sounded like. That's funny. That's why I got into Ninja Turtles, because there's a Mikey character. And that's why.
Is that right?
No, it's not. Wait, really? But that would have been funny.
Well, speaking of which, why don't you tell the people what you picked for us?
Well, want to do something fun. And I know it was, and I wasn't going to do a theme. Somehow, I think you guys are going to squeeze it into your theme month. But I thought I really would want to talk about a movie near and dear to me. When I left my voicemail, I said, this is about a family. This is a family movie. And it's called The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. No, not The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. In 1990.
I mean, I was going to correct you.
Yeah, thank you. I saw you jumping up.
Yeah.
I don't think the man that says sun cream gets to correct anybody.
That's it. I'm leaving. But we were going to do it as a kind of a little bonus track, which we've done before with the No Way Home. Is that what it's called? That Spider-Man film, flipping heck, I can't remember. But Mikey, after the Little Shop of Horrors episode ended up on the cutting room floor, we said to you, could we turn it into an extra special episode for our monsters mixtape? Because I guess kind of mutant turtles, we could call them monsters. But equally, do you know what? This is a bridge. This is a bridge to our next mixtape, which is animation. It's so it's going to take us from one side to the other. Yeah?
Okay, perfect, perfect.
Thank you.
Also, we're breaking stereotypes. Monsters don't have to be a bad thing. Monsters can be a positive thing.
Got it.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are a positive thing.
Yep. Stay tuned for our new podcast, Film Monsters. And that's what we're going to do. Breaking those stereotypes.
Thank you for not calling me a monster like you did Kablasto. Jeez.
Oh, but, I mean, Kablasto is one.
He was great. That was a great app. Come on.
He was great. He was, yeah.
Edit that out.
Well, note to self. Yes. All right. Well, guys, I have some instructions here that were written out for me. I have recently acquired a new pet turtle. And it says steps on how to care for your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. So I'm going to go through these steps with you guys now.
Oh, God.
Okay, it says step one, first, allow your turtle to soak in some radioactive toxic waste. Step two, once the turtle reaches appropriate size and age, have a rat teach them the martial art of ninjutsu.
Oh, God.
Step three, after training is complete, have your turtle pick out an IBAN color of its choice, followed by picking out their weapon of choice. Step four, have your turtle befriend a local newswoman and former professional hockey player. Step five, have the rat kidnapped. Step six, let your turtle go through a training montage and start a journey of meditation and self-discovery. Step seven, find the rat. Step eight, have your turtle defeat a man in a sparkly onesie, regaining the honor of the master of said rat. Step nine, celebrate with a hearty cowabunga and pizza. Step 10, you are now a proud owner of your very own Ninja Turtle. It says, rat must be purchased separately.
Very well. Very good. Listen, Mikey, you've got to be really careful on this because Marcy will just flipping do it like a surprise synopsis on you out of nowhere. You're not even paying attention and she's just gone into a synopsis. Flipping out.
I wasn't prepared mentally. Yeah. I thought she really
what
got
if I
pet?
Did get a turtle? Wouldn't that be something?
Are we all getting turtles now? Let's go on eBay and see how much they cost.
You get a turtle. I do have a funny story about turtles in this movie, actually, but I think we're going to get into that now about how we got acquainted with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the first movie. So, Mikey, why don't you start us off with what what all kicked this off for you?
I'll say, I'll go back to when I was 8. And I walked into a bookstore with my mom. She had to get like a psychology book or something. And this is one of those mom and pop shops where they have one copy of every book. Go to the kids section. I see Teenage Mutant Ninja. Now, before this, I'm one of those kids watching Saturday morning cartoons. Ninja Turtles are on. Before that, it was He-Man and Thundercats and Transformers. And the way it was they would make TV shows to sell toys. And Ninja Turtles was no different. That was the next thing. That's what I thought was the idea behind this cartoon show. So I look at this book. And what it ended up being was, in 1988, they printed out these reprints of the comic, which was maybe only 5 years old at that time. And they were colorized versions of this, and they were a little oversized. And flipping through this, I mean, it was like listening to hip-hop or heavy metal for the first time, because it was the Ninja Turtles that I know, but they are, there's blood everywhere, they're cutting people up, they're fighting the Foot Clan, that's not robots. And I was like, what is this? I need to know what this is. And, you know, went back to the bookstore 4 more times, made my mom get me all the books. And what was really special about the books is that in the back, they kind of had some back matter where they had Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. And this was where I kind of understood this was a comic verse before anything. It wasn't like what I was used to. And not only that, but it kind of fueled my future love of independent comics, where two guys just kind of came up with this idea and it spiraled into like a huge franchise like this. And I didn't even know you can do that. And so, what was special about this comic that I got, the reason I mentioned it was a reprint of like the Leonardo micro series that turned into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 10. And this was, ended up being the backbone of the movie. There's a lot of things, a lot of similarities where Leonardo's the one who gets bum rushed by like the Foot Clan, and he, you know, gets injured, and then the turtles fight them off, and Casey Jones shows up, and they go to the farm. A lot of the things, a lot of the elements that end up in this movie. So I'm like bringing this comic to school, like, hey guys, like, check, you know, come over to the locker, check this out. Raphael just said crap. Like, can you believe that? This is real shit. This is the real stuff. And so when I'm watching this movie, I was blown away at the time even that this was following a comic so closely, because it was not what, and I think that's why I love this movie. There's no way this movie would have ever come out the way it did, like today, because it was what everybody knew in 1989, 1990 of the Turtles was what, you know, this cartoon and like the figures. And a lot of people got shocked going to see this movie because of some violence and just because it was so different from what they were familiar with, which I love. I felt like such a nerd that I had knew what the source material was going into this movie. But what I know, you know, before we started, Marcy let us know what year she was born and why this, what the connection to this movie. So that was your,
yep.
Yeah, I don't know when, like if you're born in the year this movie comes out, when you then go back and say, let's watch a movie that came out when I was born.
Well, when I was growing up, I can't remember if I saw the cartoon first or the movie first, but I always loved the Ninja Turtles. And I don't know, it was something my mom let me watch all the time. I want to say maybe it was the cartoon first. And then I think we rented like both movies like a couple different times. But like one time she did say like, I was at a friend's house and she was like, it was like down the street and she's like, I've got turtles at home. Come on. And I thought she meant like actual turtles, but she had rented the movies from Blockbuster. So I was really like, I got home. I was like, oh, we didn't get turtles. Oh, it's okay. I see what you did there. Okay. But I was so obsessed with Ninja Turtles that when I was in preschool, so I'm like 4 years old at the time. It was the first year my mom let me pick my own Halloween costume, and I went as a Ninja Turtle. Wow.
We got to see pictures of it.
I'll have to try to find them. I'll see if she still has any, but I don't know. I just always was obsessed with them. I think my cousins were too, so that always helped. So when we'd all hang out, we'd like watch the movies or something. But I can't remember what came first. I was just way too little, but it is something that's been in my life the whole time I've been alive. I don't know. It's pretty wild. Because I can't even say that about Jurassic Park, because that comes out in 93. So, of course, I was born in 1990. We found out
of course.
I was born 3 days after this movie first came out.
Yeah.
So I just can't remember. I was too young to think about it. But I know we had Ninja Turtle birthday parties for me. I know I was dressing up like one all the time. I love them so much. I never read the comics. That's the only thing. So I'd like to check those out at some point. But Dirk, what about you?
Well, I never met the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles first. Did you know who I met first?
The rat?
No. I met the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles first.
Oh.
Because the BBC didn't like the fact that they were ninjas. Didn't like the fact that they had weapons, despite the fact that they never really did anything with them. And they certainly did not like Michelangelo's nunchucks. So they were rebranded as the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. So I kind of remember me and my brother, who's about 3 years younger than me. So it must have been like the late 80s. And we were just randomly watching the kids' TV, which, you know, only used to exist for 2 or 3 hours, you know, after school, didn't it? Not like now, mm-hmm. when my kids are watching TV all the time. And these Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles comes on, and I'm just like gobsmacked. Who the heck are these guys? And became pretty into and obsessed with the turtles then. And then you kind of discover, oh, wait, they're called Ninja Turtles. Oh, well, that doesn't sound right. They sound better as Hero Turtles. And you kind of have to kind of adjust to all of that thing. And so, Mikey, I'm kind of somewhere probably maybe between you and Marcy in that I saw the cartoon, then the film, but had not read the comic at that point. But let me produce something massive for you.
Dirk.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, boys.
Like, I feel so left out.
I've got the four, just like we're holding up something absolutely ginormous in our hands right now, exactly me and Mikey. Showing it, just flapping it and flopping it out to Marcy now. And she is flabbergasted at the oversized nature of these comic books. So we've got the same version. When you were talking about it, I've got the same version as you. The one that came out about 4 years after, 3 years after the black and white, and they colored it. So I've got book one to four. And so I found these in like a secondhand shop, for about £2 each or something. And that was probably like, I don't know, mid-90s or something like that. That was my first time reading the comic. So that's a roundabout way.
Ninja.
And they are ninja now over here. Yeah. They have been officially accepted into the Ninja Guild. The BBC have relaxed their stance on turtles who happen to be ninjas and have allowed that to be broadcast. I had not read the comics before the movie. Well, before seeing the movie. And so that made the film an interesting watch.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think a lot of people even knew that there were comics back then. You know, when we were watching it, it wasn't like the internet or anybody. They weren't really out front with where it came from. And it's interesting. And it's good that we mentioned these two, because Steve Barron, the director of this movie, who eventually got the job, they were getting a lot of... There was one, you know, a lot of pitches for a movie. Like, one was a comedy with, I forget who, but it was like John Candy was going to be Michelangelo and going to dress up in suits.
Oh, my God. Do you know, and I think it was, is it Roger Corman? Was it Roger Corman directed?
Was gonna do it. Yep. Yeah.
He was gonna I feel do, like his name do. Is popping up every single episode at the moment, Roger Corman's name. And we are going to have to do a Roger Corman's mixtape. But I read that too, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy is everywhere.
Corman month. But Steve Barron was, and Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, to their credit, even though it looks like they made like every toy imaginable, they still kept everything in-house. They were pretty controlling about what their product was going to be. Even those toys, they let their own studios, like their own artists, design them. And Steve Barron, to his credit, he came in to the meeting with them and said, look, your movie is right here. And he went through the comic. He's like, this is your movie. And he had flagged certain parts. Wow. And he's like, this is your movie right here. You don't have to recreate anything. And that's what won him the job, I think. And it's pretty amazing that they stuck to this comic, especially, like I said, like that it was just, it was humongous at that time. Like it was just a cartoon phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take you on my personal journey this last week. I watched the film. And I had my reminiscent goggles on when I was watching that film. And then I thought, well, why don't I go back and reread this comic like a day later? And I was like flicking through and I was going, is this the screenplay for this movie? Yeah. Because it is so almost like at times panel for panel outlifted out of this first book, isn't it? I was shocked by how close it is to the comics. I mean, I think that's the first time I've even understood how close it is to the comics, because obviously, you know, it's not the same as the cartoon series, which I think as a kid shocked me. That really did shock me because it was such a phenomenon. Like you're saying, it was everywhere. The turtles were everywhere. So it was such an easy decision to make to base a film on that cartoon. But that's not what they flipping did, is it? They based it on this comic that probably, you know, 10,000 people had read.
Right.
It's incredible. Exactly. Incredible.
What's weird about that, too, is that as big as it was, they could not get the budget, really. Like, half the budget went to like, Jim Henson's crew.
Yeah.
And the only reason Jim Henson, because he was seeing what it was, and he was like, this is a little too, like, violent for my type of product. But Steve Barron had worked on Storyteller for him. He directed a couple episodes. And so he kind of, and I think he also, like, I think I read something that he wanted the challenge of seeing what you can do with, like, a life-size model. And let's, that's one of my points is that, thank God, they didn't CGI this. I mean, I love the suits. And even though they're quirky and they're weird, but I just think the realism of them just makes this movie, like, stand the test of time.
Well, I was going to say, sit down, because Marcy's about to go on about physical effects now.
I love the costumes in this movie. I love how animated they are. And I love how they look. It doesn't bother me. It didn't creep me out when I was little ever, you know. But I refuse to watch, I think it's what Michael Bay made, a couple new ones. And I have a funny story, but my friend is a big Ninja Turtle fan. He's the guy that I sent that screenshot of. I was like, guess what movie we're watching? And he guessed automatically what it was. So he was in a theater and the trailer came on for like the first Michael Bay one. And he had like a baseball cap on and he pulled it down and like just screamed, nope. And like, and the whole theater started laughing. But I refuse to see those because I just don't want CGI turtles. I love these movies. Like, I don't mind. I think there was 2007, 2006, they made an all animated CGI Turtles movie, like Chris Evans plays Casey Jones and Sarah Michelle Gellar's April. I can't remember who all the turtles are, but that wasn't really a bad movie, but that's animated. That's not, you know, like where there's real people and CGI turtles. No. Also, Johnny Knoxville plays Leonardo. What the heck are we doing here? But these guys, I love how they look. I do have one fault with this movie, and I would just like to get it out now.
Here we go.
So my favorite Ninja Turtle is Donatello, and I just don't like Corey Feldman as Donatello's voice. I don't think he sounds like Donatello. That's why I think I like Secret of the Ooze so much, because Corey Feldman didn't come back for that, and he sounds like what Donatello should sound like, but Corey Feldman comes back for the third one. So I just wish, like, I see Corey Feldman more as Michelangelo, not Donatello. And, like, to me, Donatello's, like, the smart, nerd, geeky guy, but I don't get that vibe that much with the Feldman voice. So that's my only, like, fault
with
this first movie.
I think that comes back to the characterization being from the comics rather than the cartoon, though, Mikey. I don't know if you agree with that.
I do, and also I think Corey got paid, like, $1,500 to do the voice of this. Like, it was such a small budget. He really didn't get paid a lot.
Really?
Yeah, and I was watching it, now watching with a different type of, you know, looking at this to talk about, like, on a podcast, I was surprised how it really is Raphael's movie.
Raphael's movie.
I mean, he really kind of brings like Casey into the crew. He brings April into the sewers. I mean, he has that one-on-one speech with Splinter, and I was realized, and then he's the one that ultimately gets hurt. It really just felt like Raphael's main focus of the movie. I'm looking at all the other turtles, and they really weren't. They were side characters, which I never really looked at before.
I think it doesn't have you don't have the personalities as well defined as you do in the cartoon. You don't have, like, Donatello is the guy with machines. We see a little bit of him fixing a car, you know, and I think you see him with a screwdriver at one point trying to do something, but it's not a big deal. We get Mikey as a Joker, and ordering pizza, but really what we see is Mikey and Donatello as good friends. Like, probably best buddies. And we see Raphael and Leonardo as butting heads quite a few times. But it is... And Leonardo, I mean, nobody likes Leonardo as their favorite, do they? Nobody picks Leonardo as their favorite. Only, like...
You need a Leonardo on a team. You need a Leonardo.
Wait, can I say something funny? So I was hanging out with a group of friends one time, and I don't know, I was, like, assigning everybody a turtle, and the guy I gave Leonardo to, he just, like, got so pissed and was like, I don't want to be the generic turtle. And, like, that's what he said to me.
Well, he's got insight into his own condition, at least, you know? And more, you know, who would want to be Leonardo? He's just so, he's a sap, isn't he? And sorry, Leonardo fans.
He's the Captain America of the team. You need that.
Okay.
Player. Yeah, yeah.
He's a level head. He's a level
comparison.
Head.
Yeah.
I forgot what we were... I forgot what we were talking about. But yeah, you don't, yeah, that's it. You don't have the, you don't, it's not as clear cut as the comics that this is who they are, but you get a very strong Raphael, this is who Raphael is. And I think, reading that first book of the comic, you do get that in the comic as well, that, that Raphael is the one who is outspoken and will go against, like, Splinter's word and that sort of thing. So I think that is written from the comic. I think, Mikey, you were saying, it's Leonardo in some of the stories that gets the sort of the beaten up and thrown through the window and all that sort of as well. But he takes on that role, I think, doesn't he, Raphael? Is that right? Have I explained that very well?
They give him, and it's good too, because it's his anger that gets him into trouble. The comic that I was referring to, and I just want to say, like, and this is like just nerd talk, but whenever somebody talks about the greatest comic book artist, Peter Laird is probably never in there, just because maybe this is success he's had, but like this comic, this Leonardo micro series, it really lays the groundwork for this scene with Raphael. And oh, and that is the biggest difference from like the cartoon. I think when everybody's used to the cartoon, Raphael was like the guy that made jokes, and he here is, I will say, the most true New Yorker, I think, of all the whole group. I mean, that's the other thing I love about this movie. It's New York City. Just the intro, you get the first 30 seconds, 2 minutes of this movie, where it's like you get a sense of the crime wave that's going on. April talking about the crime wave, and you see the actual crimes being committed. And anything with New York City, especially in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s, I'm going to watch and love. I love how it's part of this movie. Just the idea, too, of like an island of... I mean, I'm jumping around here. I going back to the personalities, the other thing I love about this that's, I think, is something about this time period of movies in the 80s where it's efficient storytelling. We get everybody's personalities, and we get an origin story, we get an arc, and we get a conclusion in 90 minutes, which you don't, this would be 24 episodes. This would be 2 seasons on Netflix these days, and you don't get that anymore. And yeah, they're established characters, but they're different from what everybody's used to. But I think you kind of get a sense of everybody and what the conflict is. And there's a lot of different story arcs. I was looking at Danny, who's like the human character, which growing up as a kid, like I hated, but he's really like one of the more compelling characters in here. One of the things I love is that they don't really go into beating over the head with everybody's, like, their subplot, because Danny, it's him and his father, and he's in this, kind of caught up in a gang, this Foot Clan, and he's like a kid that has a father. We don't know if he doesn't have a mother or something or any siblings, but he's kind of rebelling against his dad. He's growing up in New York City. He's looking for something, and he's getting into trouble with the law. He has this father-son interaction with Splinter and has a resolution with his dad. I mean, just that arc by itself is another subplot that I think is doing a lot of storytelling within the whole main story, which I thought it does really, really well.
Well, we've kind of got a little bit of a gimmick going here, Mikey, on this podcast, that we only really do movies with father-son relationships and father-son dynamics. Right. So this feels perfect here, because I remember watching it as a kid and thinking Danny looks so old. And now watching it, I'm like, oh my god, he's 13 or something like that. You know, he looks ridiculously young. But as well, the mirroring of Danny with his dad, and probably Raphael with Splinter, you know, and then the kind of the how their slightly dysfunctional relationships, but ultimately they do love and respect their dad. It was nice to have those kind of dueling story arcs going through to really, it's got a lot of heart, this film, hasn't it? It's got a lot of heart. And it's all mostly about family, I suppose. That's what I got from it anyway.
If we're going to talk about family, I think one of my favorite parts of this movie is Splinter's flashback and him with the baby turtles, and just the way he tells it, like, a couple baby turtles. And the next thing I knew, they were big as me or like something. And he's like, and I grew in intellect. And I just love that flashback. But I love when they're like little tiny baby turtles and like the ones like pizza. And it's so even when I was little, I think like I would watch that scene a lot. But like, you get the backstory of how like they came. Well, Splinter comes from Japan to New York with his master, and then he, you know, loses his master, and he's kind of all alone. And then he finds his little baby turtles, and then he raises them and teaches them, you know, how to fight and everything. But I love that flashback scene so much.
And it seems like it's shot on video, doesn't it? Like the flashback.
Yeah.
Like they made a really conscious decision to make it look like that was way in the past. Do you not think? Every time that comes up, I'm...
Brian Henson, he directed that little scene, that little like beat footage. Just like that.
Oh, I love it. That makes so much sense that why I love it then so much, because I love Muppet movies, and especially 90 Muppet movies, which he directed most of.
Since we're talking about the origin, should I get... Sorry, Derek. Go ahead.
No, I was just... All I was going to say on that was, I think that was the moment in the film when I was watching it the first time that I went, this is not like the cartoon. I don't think it was that. The penny was starting to drop now. I'm like... I don't think he's a rat in the cartoon. I think he's a human that turns into a rat. That's right, isn't it? So even just that little detail, I was like, okay, this is not I was expecting.
Is this too nerdy to talk about? Do you guys know the connection between the turtles and Daredevil from the comic? No.
Absolutely. Absolutely tell us, Mikey.
Okay, this is, and we can edit it out. Eastman and Lara, they're huge like Kirby fans. That's like how they connected. But at the time, they were huge Frank Miller fans who was doing this legendary run on Daredevil, and they liked what he did. And when the story of like how they created the turtles was just like messing around in the apartment, they're drawing things and coming up with the name. And then when they were doing the comic, they had to flesh out like an origin. And they liked Daredevil so much, and Daredevil's origin in Marvel was Matt Murdock was on the corner of New York City, and he pushes somebody out of the way, and something from the truck hits him in the head, blinds him, gives him super other senses, and that's Daredevil's story. They continued that. They said, what if what fell off the truck was like this ooze? Another kid standing on the corner holding a bowl full of turtles, hits the turtles, and it crashes, and they go into the sewer, and the ooze transforms the Ninja Turtles, and this rat that comes up to him and turns them into Ninja Turtles.
Oh my god.
And also, the Foot Clan, they were called the Foot Clan because the Daredevil fights the hand in the comics, the Ninja Clan. So
my god. Yeah.
So that's just blow my tiny little mind, because when I was reading the comic the other day, I was like, this is just like Daredevil's origin. I was reading that going, that guy pushing that old guy out of the way, that's like Daredevil's origin there, isn't it? And it's, but that, you're right, I didn't connect that actually it's what happens after his origin. That is, I love that. I absolutely love that.
I'm not sure too, because in the comic you'll see that it says TCRI on the ooze, and it's TGRI in the movie. And I think they changed the name because, and this could be wrong, but in Marvel it was called TCRI, and they didn't want to get sued by them, and so they changed it just as like TGRI.
I love that. I love that. And you can tell the sort of the Frank Miller love with the amount of rooftop battles that we've got going on in this as well, haven't we? Just like pure.
I love it.
Ripped straight out of those Daredevil comics.
Well, let's talk about the fighting in this, because it really got them in hot water. It was low budget; they could do whatever kind of, and it gave them freedom, kind of do whatever they want. But this was a big part of contention from a lot of parents, especially that watched this movie, and even kids. I remember like the scene when Raphael's getting beat up. The sounds he was making were pretty horrific. And even now watching it, it's pretty, like, my kids, I think, were a little teary-eyed the first time they watched it. It borderline to PG-13. I mean, it's PG-13, but I think there was a scene that they changed because they were bordering rated R. And it was Tatsu, Shredder's right hand. When he beat up that kid, he killed him in the first movie. And they said, they added sounds that says, like, people are saying, like, oh, it's okay. Like, he's making noise. But he had killed him in the... Then they were bordering a rated R, and people couldn't believe like the violence of this. And Jim Henson himself, there's a bad joke that this is the movie that killed Jim Henson, because it was just like totally not what, like, this is the last movie he did that he worked on before his unfortunate passing. And it just scared everybody away. And even people that made this movie were like, what did we do? What's going to happen? We're not going to make any money.
Oh, they were wrong on that one.
They were wrong.
But I mean, what you said about Raphael there, it rings so true to me, because I was like, I was pretty sad watching this movie the first, you know, as a kid, and what happens to Raphael. There's two incidents. One, when he gets smacked by that cricket bat from Casey Jones, and he gets walloped with that cricket bat, and he ends up flying through the sky and lands in the bin. I was like, oh, I don't like that. I don't like that. And then when he's, like, knocked comatose and he's just slumped in that bath. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Just like, is he alive? Spots. Check a turtle pulse. or something. But I was really, you know, and I think I had a pretty hard time kind of adjusting to that, and adjusting to the fact that this is not what I was expecting in the cartoon, and just how tonally and visually dark everything was.
That's why I love it, though. That's why, as a kid, I'd be like, I shouldn't be watching this.
This is great.
Can we also talk about Raph in the trench coat? How he really is not in disguise at all, but he goes to critters, and you can see his legs, you can see his face. Yeah. I'm like, it's what completely are we doing, accurate. Everybody?
If you're in New York, everybody in that city is keeping their head down and minding their own business. Marcy. Yeah. It totally checks out. If you walk those streets in New York, it checks out.
But coming back to that kind of the violence of the film, I think that's haunted the Turtles ever since its existence, hasn't it? You know, like you say, the comics are quite violent, and you definitely see blood in the comics. And even in the cartoon that was going for a long time, they had weapons, but they barely used them. You know, they knocked somebody on the head with the end of a katana or something like that. And, like you know, like I said, in the UK, it was rebranded Hero Turtles. And I think the next two movies were very less ninja-y, weren't they? Very less ninja-y. So what we've got here is probably the only encapsulation of the original idea of what the Turtles is, isn't it?
I agree. And that's why I love it. Mm-hmm. Even just the idea, and this is like, I love the island that all the teenagers escape to, and you can see that they are training this. It's like a pleasure island for kids. Mm. Let them do whatever they want, but it comes at a cost. You're going to be trained to be like a little army here. And I always, like, as a kid, was like, you know, when I become a teenager, I'm going to be... Gangs are going to come up to me and ask me to join their gang left and right. And I'm going to have to be ready to have the strength to say no.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Or just join and play NARC all day.
Yeah, NARC, that was a dark game, too. That made an appearance.
Mikey, you talking about that island now, it just made me think of Pinocchio, how all the little boys go there, but then they get turned into donkeys. Mm-hmm. So it's really, like, similar to that. Can we talk about the people in this movie, specifically April and Casey? Because I think they're, to not only have, like, an origin story and four turtles and a rat and a villain and then, like, the foot gang, but to also incorporate Casey and April pretty seamlessly. Mm-hmm. I think this movie does a really good job at that. Also, I think they're both really good performances. I love Casey Jones in this movie so much, and I love April in this movie. And if I'm correct, I think it's a different April in the next movie. Mm-hmm. A different actress, I think.
Paige
Tripp. But I love those two. I love their weird, awkward sexual tension in this movie, specifically when, like, Mikey walks in on them giving, like, or Casey giving April a massage, and they, like, don't think anything of it. It's, oh my God.
That massage was 1 centimeter away from a grope, wasn't it? I just, like, watching her out, mate, how far are you taking this massage? Because you are close.
This was a scene I made sure no parents were watching when I was watching on VHS. But you're right, Marcy. I liked lovers to, what is it, haters to lovers trope. And it is on par, I think, with, like, Han and Leia, how they just get... In this short time,
definitely,
it develops into something that's believable, I think. Mm-hmm. I love their tension.
Yeah, like, even at the end when she's like, are you just going to shut up and kiss me or what? Like, you know, like, it's so similar to that. But I love their introductions, too. Like, we get a nice intro to April. She kind of starts off the movie because she's doing the news report with everything going on. But then you get, like, Casey in the park with Raph. And, you know, it really, for 90 minutes, everybody gets... a fair amount of time, I feel like. I don't feel like anybody's not, like, shortchanged. Not even, like, I know it's mostly Raph's movie, but I feel like the turtles all get their fair share of time. Like, Donatello has a weird connection with Casey, you know, and then Mikey and April are pretty close, and then Leonardo, who cares, is doing something. But what do you think? What do you guys think of those two? Do you like them in this movie?
Yeah, April, she is phenomenal, I think, because she's the one challenging the police. She's going on the news and saying the police aren't doing it enough. And then she's the one, you know, even the subway fight, like, she stands up to them and tries to fight ninjas. And she takes a sigh in the beginning of the movie. Like, she's a BA in this movie the whole time. But Casey, Elias Koteas, and I forgot April's name. Oh, God, I shouldn't.
Judith
Hogue. And she's like, become the fan favorite. She's come back with, like, NECA has made all these, like, toys of, like, the turtle movies and stuff. And she, like, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she just, like, advertises for them, and it's of her likeness. Really? Like, she really embraced, like, the April character. Yeah. It's great. She wanted more money in the next movie. And even in making this movie, she didn't want. They were like, you're going to wear, like, the yellow jumpsuit the whole time. And she's like, nope, I am not doing that. And she's like, nope. She's a nobody. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. But she didn't come back. She wanted more money. She wanted money. She thought, the movie made $300 million, something like that, on a $15 million budget. And she was like, you know, where's my paycheck? And So that's why they went with somebody else in the second movie.
Oh, that sucks. I mean, you do get to see her in the yellow raincoat. That's as close as we get, I think, to the like iconic yellow coat and everything. But I want to talk about whenever she... One, I feel so bad because they, like, when they rescue her, they put her on that disgusting couch, and I just feel so bad for her. And then she sees Splinter, and she's freaking out. But I really love when she first sees, I think it's Mikey and Donatello, and she just starts screaming, and then they start screaming, and it reminded me so much of E.T. whenever, like, Drew Barrymore's character first sees E.T., and they both just start screaming at each other, and that's what that reminded me of, and I love it so much.
That was good.
The use of Casey Jones in this film was inspired in that. Again, I'm coming to it from the cartoons as a kid, and he was not like this in the cartoons. I think he was very sort of focused on... He's very kind of one-dimensional, maybe, and focused on violence. You know, when if you got a movie that's got four mutant ninja turtles in and one giant rat, you need a couple of humans knocking around to kind of empathize with, maybe, I think, just in case. And I think him and April's relationship do that really well, and how Casey has a fight with Raphael right at the beginning, but then just suddenly decides he's his mate after that, doesn't he? And he's like, that's it, we're mates now.
I love when April's apartment's on fire and the rest of the turtles get to meet Casey for the first time. And I think Donnie's like, who is that? And Mikey goes, Wayne Gretzky on steroids. And I love that line so much.
I remember all the trailer pieces. Casey. Like, that was one that was in the trailer. Oh. I remember seeing it on TV.
Oh, was it? Oh, wow. Yeah, I love the April performance, but I might like the Casey performance even like more, because I don't think Casey's in the next movie either.
Nope. And they underutilized him in the third one. It was like a comedy.
Straight up cold-blooded murderer, though, Casey, isn't he? Flipping Nora. He doesn't pull any punches. Just like, well, just what? Trash compacts. I'm speaking in American. Trash compact shredder. Just no second thoughts. Oops.
Nope.
Dead. Whoops. Dead.
What is Casey's like day job, or does he just have mad money from being like a former professional hockey
player? For
less
than a year. I don't think he has a day job. I think his day job is fighting crime and eating out of bins. That's his day job.
Fixing radios on the top of the turtle.
So well done, April, on snagging yourself that fella.
Okay. Thinking about them kissing now, it's like, oh, when's the last time he brushed his teeth? I wonder. Oh, gosh. April goes through a lot in this movie. I do want to talk about also the score this movie. Yes.
I knew that
I just
want to
be... I want to be buried with it. Like, please. It's so good. It really is so good.
I think it's one of the ways they got away with having the ninja stuff in that I think when the turtles are doing ninja stuff, the score lightens the mood, do you think? It's not like it suddenly becomes quite jovial, the score. Like it's almost like a circus action scene or something like that. That's the impression I got. They really tried to make it seem fun when the Ninja Turtles were jumping around, thrust kicking humans.
And then it gets super serious. Yeah, you're right. And then when the floor falls and then they cut the power and the fire starts, it gets super intense. And it has, like, the whole time, it has, like, that Japanese, ancient Japanese, like, influence little, like, sound over, like, a hip-hop beat or something. It sounded, I love this. John Duprez, that's the composer.
Oh, is that right? And Marcy, you mentioned the training montage in your synopsis. Did you not feel like there was a real Rocky vibe to the the music there in the score as well when they're doing the training montage on the farm? I think the score is really front and center at lots of different points in it. Definitely. I was thinking of you, Marcy, when I was watching it, because I was like, oh, she's going to like that. She's going to like that bit.
But like how you were saying, like for me, like when I was growing up, like, the cartoon and these movies are so blended, at least the first two movies, are so blended together for me that they feel like the same thing almost, just because, I don't know, it was just, I was young, it was happening all at the same time. But I think, like why I liked this movie so much when I was younger was just how lively the music gets and how it makes it seem so much more lighthearted than it actually is. And it is crazy going back and watching it now and you're like, this is pretty dark. This is pretty sad. Raph is like half passed out in a bathtub.
I did think the first time you see Raphael in that bathtub, you're like, what is flipping heck? What is going on?
That's
give
not
him
a medical
an IV
thing.
Drip. Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Just like, why is he... Why is he in that bath like that? Oh my god, is that what you've just
put
done?
Put him in there like that. I know. Too. Like,
came out.
Just threw him in there and left.
There must be an emergency vet somewhere.
I do love that when movies do this, though, where they have some... It takes a while. Like, if you watch it, they really don't even use their weapons or anything like that for a while. Mm. It was such a small budget. Even the first scene where they take out, you know, April is going to get mugged. They do the scene. And it was going to be like the Ninja Turtles kick all the bad guys' butts, but they ran out of money and they ran out of time that they just turned all the lights off and have then you hear the sound effects of them beating them up. And so you really don't see them fight for like a... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the first three fights are all Raphael just by himself. I don't know whether that's like a budget thing, because it was like, I can't remember them now, with one fight with Casey, one fight with the foot on the underground with April. There was like the first, all you see is Raphael. And I wondered if that was like either a puppetry issue or a cost issue.
Well, did you catch that the guy that voices him, he was in the suit too. Mm. So I think Leonardo and Raph are the only two that voice the character and are actually in the suit doing the martial arts and everything. So I wonder if maybe like they were just getting the most of their money using him. I don't know what the case is there.
It could just be storytelling. Where it's just, I thought that was, you know, everybody loved like the first Spider-Man movie ever, because he really doesn't become Spider-Man until halfway through the movie. And I think that's the right way to do it. You establish all these characters and all these storylines, and then you can do the action and do the cool stuff. And because I love, even after that, they have this scene at the farm where it slows down again and they recover and they heal, and then they have a crazy ending. I love movies when they do that.
Well, we haven't really talked about Splinter yet, so maybe we should talk a little bit about him. One thing that always makes me laugh when I rewatch this is that Shredder has him but can't remember, like, that's the rat that destroyed my... Like, you know, like, there's this rat that knows, like, martial arts and has turtles that know martial arts. You wouldn't think, like, maybe, hey, that's Master Yoshi's pet rat or anything like that.
You're telling me, Marcy, a rat attacks you, and 20 years later, you're going to be like, this giant rat might have been that same rat that cut my face 20 years ago. I don't know. I do love that, though. He's like, oh, the way they are describing how their fighting style, and their fighting style was, like, grabbing onto bicycle seats and, like, kicking in the air and, like... What fighting style is that?
Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, man.
Splinter taught him that.
Well, the Splinter puppet is beautiful. Beautiful. I want to give him a kiss. If this giant rat is so tender. I think that's the word I use to describe him. And when he has his little chats with Raphael and then with Danny later on, and you're just like, be my dad, Splinter. Just be my dad, will you? Yeah. And he's got his little wispy beard that hangs all the way down. He's so good in this, Splinter, and I think you have to believe it's an actual life-size rat who's learned kung fu from watching some guy, you know. And you do, though, don't you? And that is a testament to the Henson workshop. 100%, I think. 100%. Like, we talked, Mikey, you said like half the budget went on that. Well, money well spent. Absolutely money.
Yeah,
money entirely well spent. You know, what was it? What did you say it cost? Like 15 million to make this?
I think it was something 13 like that. Something. And then like, Jim Henson Workshop took up half of that. But with the Splinter character too, like even though they developed, that workshop did an amazing job. Steve Barron's idea was he needed to look more real. And he said, can we spray his eyes and kind of give him that glassy look? And you could see he had like tears on his eyes. And they said, you're going to destroy it. Like, we don't have a lot of these things. You're going to destroy it. And he's like, we'll do it in a couple takes. And so, like, he really kind of fought against, like, the workshop to be like, I want it to make look more real.
Oh,
and
wow.
Again, thank God it's not CGI. It looks, the way it's lit, too, is super dark. And I think it only works when you have these big suits. And, you know, it's so the dark guy that does Elmo's voice.
Yeah. It's crazy. And he does the puppet work, too. He does the puppet work as so well weird. For Splinter. Yeah, that is really funny. Oh, I did forget one thing about Casey I wanted to bring up that I absolutely love and makes me laugh so hard. But it's whenever they're on the farm, and I think he has Leo's katana, and he's just chopping vegetables.
The carrots. He's just chopping the carrots with it. I mean, that's not even efficient. That's not even efficient, because it's too big. It's too big a chopping implement. You need a small knife to chop a carrot, because you're going to do it quickly and often.
So funny. I just love when people are in a movie like this, and you should read that script and be like, oh my God, what am I doing? But everybody takes it so seriously and really gives it their all. And I love it, because I don't think this movie would work if, like, Judith and Elias weren't as good as they were in this movie. And even, like, what, you get Sam Rockwell in here, which is so crazy.
I only realized that this time. That's the first time I was, and I was watching it going, hold on, is that Sam Rockwell? And I was looking at it going, I think it is Sam Rockwell. And then I had to get my phone out and Google, is he Sam Rockwell in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Yeah, he's there, mate. Flipping front and center in this film with his white vest on.
I'm glad he shows up again more at the end, too, because, like, it is wild that, hey, that's an Oscar-winning actor in a Ninja Turtles movie.
Well, I was going to say, like, Judith, I was surprised, never got worried. I forgot, totally forgot until I was watching Armageddon that she was the wife in Armageddon. And Elias, too, was, I don't think he really had a role. And then he hit something big. I know he's on The Killing,
He's got a face. Yeah. He's got a face that has been in TV. I can't remember exactly what, hasn't he? Is that right?
Yeah, I think he's bald now, though, which is a shame because that Casey hair is like phenomenal. I'm a big fan. I see what April is going for.
Do they make it? That's always my test for romantic couples in movies. Do you think if it's 2022 and they got together in 1990 under this unusual circumstance, are Casey and April still together? Do they have kids? These two characters?
They just adopt some turtles together.
Yeah, I'd like to believe.
But Mikey, is that the only definition of a successful relationship? Is it?
No, it's not. I like that.
You can burn hot for a few months. Not that I've ever done that. I'm British, but, you know.
I mean, look at Han and Leia. They kind of made it. They had a kid together.
Oh, yeah, that works out real well. Yeah, definitely.
Good. It did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Adam Driver is beautiful, so he did it.
Can't wait for my... Well, spoilers, I won't say that. Well, can I just say that the fact that this is an independent movie blows my mind. Yeah. I can't get over that. That this was one of the biggest franchises on TV, on Saturday morning TV or whatever you want, and somebody says, right, here we go, let's make this movie. And then, like, no major studios pick it up. And it's an independent movie that costs, like, $50 million, $30 million, like we said. And then it makes £200 million, $300 million, whatever. And then, when they make the sequels, they give them less money each time to make the sequels. What kind of movie maths is this? So much sense. I don't understand. Oh, I'm sat here in me chair now, looking at my computer, and I've got like the world in front of me on the internet, and I don't think I could find a logical answer to that if I tried. If I typed in a million things into a million search engines, this movie's made like 10, 15 times as much as it costs. Why are you not giving them more money? Why are you not going, get more of these amazing puppets and let's do some crazy shenanigans? I don't understand that. That's what I don't get. Like, why was this? And is it because there was this reaction to it being a kid's property and it was too violent? Is that the reason?
Yeah, that's a good question, because you could say, yeah, maybe it shouldn't have been so violent or like this, but it made 10 or 15 times more money. It's weird, too, that it sort of reminded me of Ghostbusters at the time, that they didn't make more of these movies, like, back to back to back. It ended at 3. They could have done another, you know, 2 or something like that. No problem, I don't think. If it wasn't, if, you know, the third one wasn't so bad, I guess.
The third one is a mess. I don't think I've ever even seen it the whole way through. I think I tried once and was like, I'm good.
It is weird, too. Like, back in, without the internet, like, how'd they get, like, I guess they had test audiences and stuff commenting on these movies, but they had such a reaction to what people were saying that they were like, we got to scale it down a little bit, or that Eastman and Leonard signed off on it. Like, yeah, we'll tone it down. I'd have been like, we'll go harder.
I wonder if, like, parents, like, wrote in and stuff. Cause when we were talking about Gremlins 2, Joe Dante did get a lot of feedback from some people about Gremlins 1, that it was too scary and violent. And, I mean, that's a PG movie. I know they can be a little creepy and stuff, and it definitely scared me when I was little. But I wonder if, like, maybe they just got pushback from parents, and they were like, oh, well, we want the kids and we want the money, so I guess we got to update this franchise a little bit.
Or more than that, like, go ahead, Ter.
No, I was just going to say, but it made $200 million. You know, so it's just like, what are you going to listen to? And I'm sitting here as a cynical movie producer with my little ponytail mullet going on and stuff. But I really struggled to get my head around what failed after this film. And I know we mentioned, Marcy, in, like, Gremlins 2, like, the idea of sequels and stuff, where we talked a bit about that and how sometimes it's a law of diminishing returns or whatever. But like, why? What? It's that, it's the fact that you gave them less money. You know, why? I don't understand it. Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, and to not bring Judith back and to not have Casey at all in the second movie when they're so successful in the first one. I think I just ended up watching the second one way more, and that's why, and also the Corey Feldman thing, and that's why I sometimes say, like, I think I like the second one more, but really the first one is definitely the better movie, and the way they, like, fold in everything, like, perfectly, because the second one gets a little clunky there with the jelly donuts and all that other stuff. Well,
it's weird, yeah, too, is that, like, it didn't really launch, and maybe they're too recognizable, but I found one, I love director commentary, and the only one I can find was the German DVD of this movie, and some podcast, I should remember the name, but we're not going to advertise for them, put it out, like, and you can, like, play at the same time as this movie, and that's what I did, and Steve Barron, like, talks about everything. It's pretty, it's really interesting, and he talks at the end how, because before this, he really hadn't done much, and then after, he really didn't do much, and I was trying to figure out what happened, and I thought he really had a lot of great decisions in this movie. And he talks about at one of the, he talked about something where he got a call and Steven Spielberg wanted to meet him. And he said, I watch this movie, Ninja Turtles, all the time with my kids. Like, and I thought you did, you know, and he sees it from what he did behind the camera. I thought you did a phenomenal job. Let's talk about, you know, what we can do together as, like, you know, as a project. And he was really pitching Steve Bannon stuff. And I said Steve Bannon, I knew I was going to do it. I didn't want to do it. Steve Barron, and he wanted to do a movie with him, and he just said, we just never got the right project, and that was like his career. And it's so bizarre to me that you have such a huge success like this, and it doesn't really turn out, like, just change your whole life around. But
it's kind of, like, sad, because it's just maybe the wrong place and the wrong time, because I feel like if he were to make that now, you know, he'd be getting, like, a call from Marvel or somebody, like, within a couple weeks or something, you know, like, hey, you want to come on and do this
and next? But I don't think I even realized it until this week when I rewatched it, and then I read the comic, like I said, but it is literally the most faithful comic book movie, I think, of all time. Maybe you could argue Watchmen in a little bit is very faithful to the original source, but this is so, like, this is, he did such a good job of translating the comic to the screen. Such a good job. And, you know, to know, that's it.
Well, Mikey, is there anything else you want to talk about or add about the movie? Or any fun facts you want to share?
You know, I will say, you said Donatello. he doesn't get a good rap in this movie. And
I love Donatello.
I will say for you, like, if, and for anybody who wants more, like, great Turtle comics, like, the old stuff is good, but the IDW stuff that's coming out, or that came out in the last 10 years, is phenomenal. Donnie has, like, a great story arc, and it kind of takes some of the elements that were established and just really solidifies them and hits home on, like, a lot of great storytelling. I would recommend this to any just not just Turtle fans, but, like, comic fans out there if you want to get back into comics.
I know this might seem dumb, but I'll never forget that when I was in high school and we were going over the Renaissance, and it dawned on me who they're all named after. Like, it really, like, it was just one of those, like, oh my god, like, you know, like, do you remember where you were when you realized that the Ninja Turtles were named after these famous painters? And I just think that's just such a funny fun fact, because when you're little, that goes straight over your head, you know, and it's just so funny, and it just makes so much sense, and I love it so much. Just a fun fact about these turtles.
Well, okay, so let's do it. Let's put our cards out on the table. Who is your favorite turtle?
Well, I already said who mine
was.
We'll
say it again. Leonardo.
No. My favorite is Donatello. I think my favorite growing up was Mikey, but as I get older, I love Donatello. He's my favorite.
Why is that, Marcy?
He's the smart one. I love nerds. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love nerds. I love the nerd turtle. Thank you.
He's in Donatello is the one officially in Hufflepuff, isn't he?
No, he'd be in Ravenclaw. That's where I put him last year when I was on.
Yeah, but
rankings.
I mean, that's you just.
No,
like,
Mikey would be Hufflepuff. I think Mikey would be Hufflepuff.
Mikey and Hufflepuff.
Raph would be Slytherin, and then Leonardo would probably be Gryffindor. I bet.
Of course, Leonardo's in Gryffindor.
Mikey's all hard. He's, yeah, come on.
Leonardo is in Gryffindor because he lacks any personality. So of course, that's where he is. Mikey P, who's your favorite turtle?
Mikey was always my favorite growing up, and I wished I could have grown up and been more like Mikey. But I gotta say, unfortunately, I think I really connect with Raphael, I think. on a lot of things. I thought I'd never say that, but
I knew it.
Especially walking around New York, like I just felt like a Raphael the whole time.
See, I knew it because I'm a Raphael guy as well. Because
no way.
Cool recognizes cool. You know, game recognizes game. We know who is the A+ player in the Turtles, and it's Raphael. I just like him. Always liked him. Liked his crazy weapons. I liked his bad attitude. I like the way he looks in a trench coat. What more can you say about
that? I do love, though, I think he says it like 3 times in this movie, but he's always like, damn! And like it like pans out and it's the whole city. Yeah. Like, and you can hear him yelling.
You know how you can tell who your favorite turtle is, though, Marcy?
How?
It's whoever you pick on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. Have you got that yet for your Switch?
No, I need to get it. I
get it!
Playing that, Dirk mentioned that game, and it was like I was playing with some of our friends online, and it was reminding me like how long this has been, Turtles been part of my life, and the game just felt like the same arcade game that we were playing in 1989 or something like that. And it's wild that this franchise has existed for so long, I guess, just kind of stay with you, I guess, your whole life. So
Can I say that when we asked you to be on for Japan Mix, we asked you to do a Kurosawa film because you were so into the Kurosawa films, you know, and we knew that about you, right? So we said to you, like, come on and do a Kurosawa film, pick whichever one you want to do and let us into that world. But for this episode, where we thought we were just going to do it like as a little bonus track, we said, what do you want to do? What is the film you want to do? And when you came back with Teenage Mutant Flipping Ninja Turtles, I was like, yes, 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 of course, of course, of course. And they're so perfect. And it is so perfect for you, Mikey, because I know how much the Turtles mean to you. And I'm so glad that me and Marcy have got to share in this conversation with you and just have fun, because that's what we want to do on this. We want to have chats about things that we love and just share the joy. And I really feel like you've done that with us today.
God.
Yeah, echoing what Dirk says, I've been so stressed out because I have a million things going on, but it was so nice just to put this on, have fun, have some like nostalgia for like, because I've grown up with, this has been my whole life, I've had Ninja Turtles with me, and I love watching these movies over and over, and I love going back and watching the cartoon. I will check out the comics now. Thank you, Mikey. And thank you for picking this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for allowing me to. And how amazing is it that something I watched like a million times, like growing up as a kid, I'd be one day on the air talking to two dear friends about it. I would never would have known. So this is really, what do they call that?
I think when you
live in the dream.
Bossa Nova.
I think when you take things. I think when you take things into your heart. And then you get to share them out, Mikey. That's always well good. But listen, I know what you were talking about then. And you know what the word is. You know what the word is. You know what the word is. Well, there we go then. Teenage Mutant Ninja / Hero Turtles. But Mikey P, as you know, on the mixtape, thanks to our friend Ron, we've started to pair songs with the movies that we discuss. So have you got a song that you're going to pair with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that is not by Partners in Crime?
Can I just say, that is the perfect track for this. We did talk about the score, John Chabrez, rightly so. The soundtrack that was sold that I played, I think one of the last fights I had with my dad before my parents split, was I was playing this way too loud on vacation. And it was one of those like, fuck yeah, like this is the greatest. This needs to be heard by everybody. And it was the Partners in Crime team, Turtle Power. But
oh, amazing.
You mentioned the... it's tough. I was looking because I was trying to think of something that sounded like, you know, this Japanese score or this Asian score and something that went with, like, the urban beats that were in this movie. And I was looking, trying to think of, like, Wu-Tang songs. Ghostface and Raekwon, they did a track for the new Ninja Turtles game, The Shredder's Revenge, that Dirk mentioned. And they have a track on there, and I don't know the name of it, but that track's a banger, and I think it just fits. And that's my scapegoat for this, because this was tough. This was tough to do. Go ahead. What Arctic Monkeys song did you pick?
No, I did not pick an Arctic Monkeys song, but I picked a Regina Spektor song. It's called Your Honor, and it's about fighting for your honor, but she also slows it down and sings about frozen pizza a couple times.
What?
So that's only, I picked this.
As only Regina can do. Thank you. Thank you, I love Regina.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Thank you. My partners in crime story is that after we graduated from university, there was about 30 of us that went on a holiday to Cancun in Mexico, which coming from the northwest of England was a kind of a big deal. And so we were in this hotel full of Americans, I guess is the way to describe them. And it was a karaoke night. And me and my friend went up to karaoke and we did Partners in Crime, T-U-R-T-L-E Power. And I've never in my life had a reaction like I had after singing that song at karaoke. I got more high fives from Americans.
Please tell me that was your first interactions with Americans.
I don't know. No, not the first interaction with Americans. But God, gee damn it, what a great song. But the song I have picked is, I've gone for some kind of backdrop to Raphael's story in this, and I've picked a song by a band called Placebo, and the song is called Teenage Angst, which I think sums up Raphael's journey in this to a plum. So there we go. We've picked your songs, Ron. And we'll be like that. They're going on the playlist. And also, Mikey, you know, we're talking about music. And music is important to like me and Marcy. You know, that's one of the things we started talking about first when we started talking. But you know what's really important to you, Mikey? And that's all your comics and stuff, isn't it? And your drawing and your Project Unknown comics, which is incredible. But you've also done like about 25 flipping drawings for this movie, haven't you? And they're so incredible. You shared them with me and Marcy the other day, and you've got Leonardo underneath that tree. Do you know what? Leonardo underneath that tree. We said he's a terrible, terrible turtle, but him underneath that tree having his meditation, and Raphael on the rooftops, and you've even got one of Danny in there with his what's his Sex Pistol t-shirt on. They're so good. Would you mind
please
if we put them
thank you guys. I was
on
inspired.
Our Instagram?
And so I couldn't pick one, and I just kept going. So thank you.
They're so
thank
beautiful.
Thank you, Mikey, for sharing them.
Marcy,
mm-hmm.
If people want to write into the show, what do they do?
The movie mixtape pod at gmail.com.
That's the first time I've asked you to do the email address in 23 episodes.
And we barely heard it. What was it? The movie mixtape pod, one word, at gmail. Okay.
Thank you, Mikey. Thank you. I don't need to be here anymore. Thank you for doing my job.
So this is a bridge to our next mixtape, which is the animation mixtape, which we did announce the first film on the last episode.
Look at that.
Do you know, did you? You might not. What was that? What have we just done? Oh, my God.
I forgot to wear that while we recorded.
Yeah. So we're not going to tell you what he just put on, but it was spiffing.
It was a trench coat.
But we're going to go into animation next time. I don't know if you heard what we were going to do next, Mikey P, but we're going to do the Lord of the Rings animation from 1978. That's what we're going to do. So if you've got feelings, opinions on that kind of shenanigans, or come on, if you're going to tell us why we're all wrong about Leonardo, then why don't you just write in to the movie mixtape pod@gmail.com. And you may know that we had a lost episode of The Little Shop of Horrors, which you can still get a copy of if you want, if your email is in. But we had an email on that show that I will read out now so that Tim Hamilton doesn't think we forgot his email. So this is an email that we got from Tim, and it starts, I kill giants. That's the subject matter. Stop crying, Dirk. Save the tears for the Great British Baking Show. Love the show, Tim. And we had a bit of a chat then about the Great British Baking Show, didn't we, at the time?
Yeah, we were saying that Paul Hollywood was going to be in the Little Shop remake, and that Audrey, too, was going to get a handshake and then eat him. So that's my theory.
And then we had a little chat about who our favourite people in the Bake Off were. Now, me and Mikey, we have a little chat about the Bake Off every now and then, don't we?
What? Where am I in this conversation? Excuse me, I want to be added to
this.
Well,
I'm afraid you can't. Okay.
Two men crying over Bake Off. We don't want
over
to let
muffins
anybody else know about that.
Too.
Yeah, you can.
I think you've
muffins,
got who's yeah. You've got a favorite Bake Off person, haven't you, Mikey? I'm trying to remember now who it is. I think we said on the show last time how the season with Rahul, Ruby, and Kim Joy is the best season. And you liked, Marcy, you said you liked Henry with the ties and also Rahul.
I do. And then I do like John from season three. So those are probably my three favorites.
I couldn't
remember
who John from season three was. So that's why I focused on those two. Who's your favorite from the Bake Off, Mikey?
I gotta remember. I know Nadia. Everybody loves Nadia.
Yeah.
But
Nadia's great.
Nadia's now become an institution over here. She's popular on the TV. Hey, do you know what I was going to say? There's a guy from the Bake Off who's turned up on some kind of baking show in America. The Scottish young guy, Andrew, ginger hair with a beard. It's called something like Baking Impossible, and they have an engineer and a baker, and they have to make projects. Anyway, it's on Netflix. Have you seen that show?
Oh, yeah, my kids watch that. It's so annoying. He's like a redneck, right? I shouldn't say that. my kids were watching, I'm like, what is this?
But he's from the Bake Off, and I'm like, so that's...
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. Who's your
favorite? Helena, Mikey? Remember her? Remember Helena? Yeah. I think she got eliminated when she made all those Halloween stuff.
Oh, she was so
stuff.
Funny. Yeah, and she was going to run off with Neil, wasn't she? Or Noel,
no.
I mean.
Oh, yeah,
you don't want to name drop and speak for other people, but I think that's also Chuck Forsman's favorite is Helena as well,
yes,
maybe.
That's right.
Off of the Bat and Spider pod.
She was so cute. Mm-hmm. You guys... Like when she made the spider egg and she's like, oh, I make us little spider babies. And she was so cute.
You guys got to get on the Pottery Throwdown. I like that. I think I like that even better.
Oh, yeah.
I did watch that because you told me, Mikey, and I really love, I'm sorry I can't think of his name, but he was the one who was helping them with their pottery. Now he's a judge on the show, and I love him. I can't think of his name right now, but yeah, that's a really therapeutic show as well. I really enjoyed that very much.
I need to figure out what side that's on over here, because that's not going to be a Netflix over here. That's going to be like a BBC Two or a Channel 4 type deal. But you've mentioned that before,
It's on HBO Max in America.
Wow, that doesn't help me.
I'm just letting everyone know watch it.
I thought you were having a chat with me then, but no, you were speaking to
No, I know. I've given up on your VPN and your access to HBO Max, so ship has sailed.
I'll mail you some torrent rips and send it to you.
Well, there we go. Thanks very much, everyone. Oh, and we've got it an Instagram, the_movie_mixtape. Yeah, is that right? I always forget that.
_movie_mixtape.
But can we just say, look, if you are listening to the show and having a good time, just tell someone else that you're listening to the show and having a good time, because I think word of mouth is the way these things spread around, and we're just happy if people are listening and enjoying themselves and having fun with the chats that we are having fun with ourselves. Ain't that right, Marcy?
We.
Well, there we go then, on that bombshell. Mikey, thanks very much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mikey. Thank you. Please come back soon. Please anytime you want to like pick something fun, please come back.
Ninja Turtles 3. We'll do that next time.
No Ninja Turtles with Corey Feldman anymore.
Ninja Turtles, the Vanilla Ice retrospective.
Oh,
coming to your ear holes soon. Maybe we'll all sit down. Have you actually seen the Michael Bay ones?
Yes.
Have you? Would you recommend it or not?
For turtle fans, no. If your kids just want to see like some cool stuff, okay, you can. Yeah, I would do that.
Fair enough. Right. I'll take that as it was intended. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, and we'll see everybody next week when hopefully we'll be talking about Frodo leaving the Shire and doing all sorts of shenanigans. So we'll see you then.
Bye guys. See you soon.
So long,
bye,
Mikey. Sucker. Bye, Mikey.
Cowabunga, suckers.
Tape is a podcast hosted by Dirk and Marcy, mixed and edited by me. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Find us on Instagram at the_movie_mixtape and catch new episodes on Wednesdays. Thanks for listening. Bye!